This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Daily Digest on The Bigger Picture. I'm Sharmila Ganesan and together with me is Lim Soo Ann. Before we get into the show, just a quick reminder that BFM Health and Living is organizing a weekly webinar series from the 17th of July to the 4th of September. And on the first webinar, you can find out how to improve your eating habits and fitness regime during this COVID-19 pandemic. So join that conversation with experts on Facebook Live tomorrow, the 17th of July from 12 to 12:30 p.m. For more information, go to bfm.my/health event. This series is presented by AIA, enabling healthier, longer, better lives. And now on with the show. What do we have for today, Sue Ann?
So in early July, news broke that Indonesia had declared a state of emergency in central Kalimantan, and that's after identifying more than 700 hotspots, which are likely the result of slash and burn land clearing practices. So this, of course, reignited fears of the return of transboundary air pollution caused by these out of control fires, as we have seen in years past. So are we in for another hazy season? We know, what can we as individuals do to tackle this seemingly never-ending crisis? So before we get into our story, you know, if you have any thoughts you'd like to share with us, you can tweet us at BFM Radio. Or you can also WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. So I think many of us would have let out an involuntary shudder or felt our throat tightening when the news broke that Central Kalimantan Province in Indonesia had declared a state of emergency until September 28th. And that's after identifying over 700 fires. So according to news reports, the province detected more than 700 hotspots across the region since the start of the year, and representing fires which are often intentionally set to clear land for agriculture. This includes on palm oil and pulp plantations.
Yes, so a report from fizz.org also said that Indonesia deployed tens of thousands of personnel and water bombing aircraft in May to tackle the season's first fires. And over the past few weeks, they've even started cloud seeding. This is, of course, a technique that uses chemicals to induce rain in the Riau province on Sumatra, which plans to roll it out in other parts of the island and in Borneo. And the operations are set to last throughout the dry season and is expected to end around September. Central Kalimantan Disaster Mitigation Chief Darlian Shah was also quoted as saying that dozens of blazes have already been extinguished.
So as hopeful as this sounds, it's tough to forget that choking toxic haze that sent air quality plummeting from last year's blazes, and which were the worst since 2015. So Indonesia's 2019 fires saw around 1.6 million hectares of land razed, and these fires, which were worsened by dry weather, were estimated to have produced almost double the emissions caused by blazes in the Brazilian Amazon in 2019 as well. So many of these fires were on swampy, carbon-rich peatlands, which become highly flammable when they are drained of water to grow crops.
So we all know what 2020 has been like, and environmental group Greenpeace warned that haze and the global coronavirus pandemic could really be a deadly combination. After the UN said last year that the forest fires put millions at risk from air pollution. The environmental group Greenpeace said in a statement that this year we are facing a global health crisis with a virus that affects people's lungs. Companies and governments have a crucial and unprecedented responsibility to take steps to prevent the deadly haze from the forest fires, as it will only double the threat to the health of millions across the region. An Indonesian official said that current estimates suggest that the blazes won't be as bad as last year, but also that they couldn't know for sure either.
So this decades-long deadly cycle of air pollution caused by fires largely in peatlands and mostly relating to agricultural land conversion caught global attention back in 1997 and 1998. So back then, some 8 million hectares of forest were razed by slash and burn land clearing, presumably for oil palm and other cash crops. So the second major spike came in the months of September to November 2015, and then again last year, as we discussed earlier, and as many of us actually remember. So the severe fires and haze in 1997, 98 and 2015 were exacerbated by an intense El Nino event that brought prolonged dry conditions.
In an article from Forum in the Edge Malaysia Weekly, independent economist Kor Yu Ling and USM's Professor Emeritus Johan Saravanamuttu offered their opinion that the solutions to addressing and eventually eliminating Southeast Asia's haze smog have to be predicated on the triple factors of weather watching, mitigation measures, which includes peatland management, and engaging people to respond to the problem. Now, engaging with people on the haze problem is something that the civil society group Cherah is working on. And this group of students, academics, activists, lawyers, environmentalists, writers, engineers, and corporate professionals, they are keen to get more of us better informed on how the effects of transboundary haze extends into our everyday lives.
So in collaboration with Kami and Greenpeace Malaysia, they are hosting Clearing the Air. So it's an anti-haze webinar series with a focus on the powerful role of civil society, you know, from grassroots to international. And this is an influencing vital cohesive change. So to find out more about this, we have on the line with us Najah On, a committee member of Cherah Asia. So thanks for joining us. And Najah, as individuals, you know, we may not be the ones starting the fires, but how are our actions also causing or contributing to the haze?
It may be difficult to digest, but believe it or not, we are so reliant on palm oil every day. The fruit of the palm oil tree is a bit of a super plant in its refined form, and it is used in everything we consume, like shampoo, soap, detergent, cosmetics, ice cream, processed foods, the list goes on. Their trunks and fronds can be made into everything from plywood to the composite body of, once upon a time, our national car. It is the vegetable of choice to make consumer products. And with the mandate of developed nations to add biofuel into the mix of automotive fuel, the demand for this plant has risen exponentially. The problem with this is that with growing demand comes unsustainable production. And this is our biggest challenge, which us as consumers don't quite see. Now, as you know, the haze is, of course, not only related to the preparation of land for palm oil plantation, but also pulp and paper. Let me, you know, be clear on that. The holy grail is to balance demand with sustainable growth, Sue-Ann. It's an interesting dichotomy because on one end, palm oil plantations have helped lifted communities in Indonesia and Malaysia in particular out of poverty and given them a good income. But on the other hand, the uncontrolled management of these plantations are destroying our ancient forests and wildlife habitats such as the Sumatran tiger and the Borneo orangutan. So I don't know if I've answered your question there, but we all have a part to play.
So how should we rally the authorities and the government to solve this issue and be consistent about it and not just when the haze smothers us?
I know, right? Look, as humans, it's completely natural to forget about horrible things once they go away. But believe me, the transboundary haze pollution issue will never go away anytime soon. The toll of the toxic haze on public health, as well as your own hip pocket, is astounding. We first recorded the haze as early as the 1970s. And since then, we've had varying degrees of haze blanketing our skies to make way for new plantations to satisfy demand. Now, there's this thing called the Roundtable on Sustainable Palm Oil. You might have heard that one before. In shorter form, it's called RSPO. It's a standard, and it's a certification that provides stringent palm manufacturer criteria and recently have incorporated standards for small holdings and how to approach high-value conservation forests. Specifically, there's this thing called best practices for no deforestation, no peat, and no exploitation policy. Burning of peatlands, as you might already know and your readers might already know, has been a major contributor to the forest fires so far. Now, as everyday citizens who are buying palm oil products every day, we can make a big difference by your purchasing power. So if you can, look out for CSPO or RSPO label products at the supermarkets when you buy groceries. On the other hand, on a top-down level, palm oil plantations also happens to be a political issue. And I don't want to shy away from this because we might as well talk about it. Indonesia's PM Joko Widodo has pledged to do better to pull up the corporations that year after year get a slap in the wrist for doing the wrong thing, but then do it again. There are smarter mechanisms such as responsible financing by the big funders and smallholders engagement. Malaysian banks do fund palm oil projects. You may want to check this with your bank.
So from there, what would effective community action to solve this problem look like?
I guess first and foremost, punishing the wrongdoers is one thing, but punishing small-time farmers who don't understand best practice standards is another. Supporting palm oil is a complex issue. As we know, we need it in everyday products. And it's also a vegetable-based product that, you know, most communities around the world probably prefer. I guess we want to punish or hold responsible people accountable without getting our poor farmers, in strife, I guess, when we do this. In an ideal world, we would have government officials who do not have conflicting business interests in palm oil so that we can get on with pursuing fines and prosecutions. That's one thing. We would also have informed consumers that refuse to support companies that don't do what they say they'll do. And we'll have governments that fund on-the-ground NGOs and environmental groups, for example, that help farmers understand their rights and responsibilities. Now, community action comes also in the form of being active. Active in voicing your dissatisfaction at how things are being dealt with. Active in writing to your banks and government institutions and your ministers. Active in pursuing your ideals on your platforms. And most importantly, talking about it with your friends and family.
So you mentioned earlier that, you know, governments are taking action to punish and hold people accountable for the fires that they start. And you also mentioned how as individuals, you know, we can choose to not support companies that are carrying out these practices. So is that one of the ways that we as individuals can hold them accountable?
That is absolutely one of the most important things you can do, most definitely. Read the news, do your own research, have a look at the World Wide Web in terms of company history. Look, Malaysia and Indonesia are the biggest producers of palm oil in the world. So there's only so many companies that you can look out for in terms of, big corporations that have big plantations in these two countries. There are smallholders as well, and smallholders as in like small farmers who want to make a living out of palm oil. And they sometimes get in the news as well because sometimes they get blamed for starting fires and things like that. I would encourage your readers to also stay informed on alternative news and news that come out of the international lens as well, outside of our own news outlets, just to, you know, just to get a bigger picture of what's happening.
So is social awareness of the damaging consequences of the haze also an important part of a solution to eliminate the haze?
Absolutely. As you know, Malaysia is a multicultural country, and we are also proud citizens of the world. Our education and information is absorbed on many levels and many ways. We speak different languages. We need to have champions that can speak up, like me, in all facets of society so the immediacy of action does not stall. And this is where groups that I'm part of, like Cerah, comes in.
So speaking of Cerah, tell us a little bit about the upcoming webinar session and why people should attend it.
Cerah is an anti-haze action group that was formed in 2015 at the back of the horrible, really horrible haze we had experienced in the region. And as you know, we had another horrible haze year last year in 2019. We are made of everyday citizens who are lawyers, environmentalists, doctors, scientists, and academia. We aim to reach out to the wider community about the complexities of the haze issue and lobby governments, community, and corporations for change. I can't possibly cover them all here. So if you want to get involved, the upcoming webinar is part of our Let's Clear the Air series, and it's focused on campaigning for action and the tools you need for this. This is our second webinar. The first one we had a few weeks ago with Dr. Kor Swee King, who is a physician from the Malaysian Health Coalition, who spoke about the relationships between haze, public health, and COVID. Now, this Sunday, we have a speaker from Greenpeace, and as well as CAMI, which is Climate Action Malaysia. They are well-versed in the hands-on challenges and practical measures to take action. So if you guys want to join us and learn a little bit more about some of the topics that I raised before in terms of the complexities of the haze and the root causes and how we can get a bit smarter in influencing policy and change, please do join us. You can find us on Facebook at Cerah Anti-Haze Action or Instagram at Cerah Asia. And we'd love to have more members. So the webinar is live at 11 a.m. Malaysia time, Sunday, the 19th of July.
Thank you, Najah. That was Najah On, a committee member for Cerah Asia, and she's also an environmental engineer and principal at the sustainability consultancy Footprint Mechanics.
So just once more again, if you would like to join that webinar that Najah just told us about, it's happening this Sunday, the 19th of July at 11 a.m. via Facebook Live. For more information, you can head to Cerah's Facebook page at facebook.com/anti-haze action. You know, I think the pandemic has been so on everyone's minds that we've not even had time to think about the yearly occurrence that is the haze.
And it is almost time for the haze.
It is. And when this news popped up, I remember how last year we were wearing masks because of the haze and how debilitating and depressing and really so many people were unwell. It just was not a good time at all. And this seems to be something that we've almost started normalizing because it happens every year.
Yes. And like you said, Shamla, I think because every year we've sort of expected that, oh, around this time of the year, the haze will be here. We've sort of just learned to live with it, even though, you know, even for someone like me who doesn't have any breathing issues, who doesn't have any lung conditions, I already find it difficult enough to breathe when it is haze season. You know, you step out of your house and immediately there's just this, the smell of the haze, you know, it makes it so much more difficult to breathe. You just don't enjoy going outside anymore, which is not what we want right now.
Yeah. And I was very taken with what Najah spoke about in terms of collective community action, not just from an individual level, but also from corporations or companies. For instance, you know, a number of Singaporean supermarkets, they stopped the sale of some products produced by alleged haze-causing companies. And key Indonesian suppliers, that were greenlit by the Singapore Environment Council's platform, were actually reported to have achieved this really tough task of having no fires. So this is something that Malaysia could perhaps consider doing as well. It doesn't need to be huge actions. It can be these kinds of smaller measures that actually affect a larger change when grouped together.
And also, Nunaja was mentioning how when we go and do our shopping, you know, we can look for labels that say RSPO. That's sort of the little things that we can do at our level to make sure that we are not supporting companies who are sort of practicing these illegal land clearing practices that are practicing slash and burn land clearing. That actually contributes to the haze and it makes our own life more miserable.
Yeah, and in terms of things that we could do on a smaller level, besides, I know that online there have been calls for people to, for instance, boycott products, but, you know, other things that are perhaps more of an affirmative kind of action to take would be to call for transparency from our government to allow companies to publish maps of their plantations, right? This would really help responsible companies to prove that they are clean and not involved in destroying forests, while also putting companies that are practicing deforestation or slash and burn techniques under the spotlight. Well, that is all on this topic today. But if you have thoughts that you'd like to share with us, if you'd like to tell us your experiences with the haze and, you know, if you have fears about it coming back this year, you can tweet us at BFM Radio. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8888. Or you can drop us a message on Facebook. We are BFM The Bigger Picture. And if you've missed any part of today's show, you can download the podcasts on bfm.my/dailydigest, on the BFM app or on Spotify. Coming up at 3 p.m. on By the Book, Lee Chui Lin and I will be speaking to Malaysian-born, Singaporean-based author Lauren Ho about her debut novel called Last Tang Standing. So stay tuned for that after the 3 p.m. news. We'll leave you now with We Didn't Start the Fire by Billy Joel, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.